at 10:59. Coming up at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews Jakob and Arnold Pander about their joint show, Fabrication Corrosion, at the Mark Woolley Gallery. Stay tuned for Stage and Studio with host Dime Roberts. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. Saba, saba.
Saba, saba. Saba, saba. Hey, it's been a while since I've done a live show, so I wanted to play some happy music. Let's all do a happy dance. Okay, you can't see me. It's radio. We're listening to Carl Zero, a French talk show host turned singer-musician. Yeah, check him out, Carl Zero. I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio. Portland's love affair with all things Shakespeare continues with three more local theaters producing The Bard this summer. We'll talk with two companies, Anon It Moves and Stringhouse Theater, who are producing and collaborating on Hamlet and a Tom Stoppard play based on the two of the minor characters of Hamlet in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. And in the latter part of the show, we'll hear from Brian Allard of the Stalwart Company or Original Practice Shakespeare Festival and their presenting original scripts of Shakespeare mixed with a little improv. We'll also do a ticket giveaway, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. With me in the studio are directors Elizabeth Watt. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Emily Gregory.
Hi.
Hello and welcome back. And actor Erica Turpining Romeo. Hello.
Hi.
It's good to meet you. So they're all from a collaboration of two companies, Anon It Moves and Stringhouse Theater. And so I just want to welcome you all to Stage and Studio. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
So we're going to talk about all this. It's a collaboration of two companies, Elizabeth and Erica. You're part of Anon It Moves, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm one of the co-artistic directors of Anon It Moves, and we brought Elizabeth out from L.A. to direct this project. So this is the first time we've worked with her and the first time she's worked with us.
Ah, so we're working out the threads of who belongs to here. And Emily, are you part of both Anon and String?
No, I'm the co-founder and one of three members of Stringhouse Theater.
Stringhouse Theater. Mm-hmm. But you guys work together a lot. You've worked together in the past, right?
Yeah, and a lot of us have went to school together at Lewis Park.
Because it seems like very two tight-knit groups. So why have two separate groups? Why not just form one big one?
Well, actually, the work that we do is very different. While we come from a lot of the same education background, Anon It Moves does a lot of Shakespeare stuff. And Stringhouse has, up until this point, mostly been focused on new work.
More experimental work.
More experimental work, a lot of devised theater. And we, new works and collaborations with outside groups. So.
Okay. All right. Well, it's good that you're having this collaboration, though. So how did that all come about? I mean, you all have known each other. Let us in on the thought process here. So you have, you've known each other, and you've got these two different groups. So when did you decide to do this summer project where you're both working basically on the same project, but different aspects of it?
Well, we had been planning Anon It Moves since we were founded a couple years ago. We knew we wanted to do a production of Hamlet. We had a little bit of conceptual framework already in place. And last summer, actually, actress Ethelyn Friend, who's out here playing Gertrude for us this summer, I've known her for years and years and years, and she's a kind of mentor and surrogate mother figure in my life. And she was out in Portland last summer, and we started discussing the project. And when she decided to come on board, then everything started to explode, and we just kept talking about what else we could do, how we could make it bigger, how we could bring more people in that we wanted to work with. And once the idea of incorporating Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in repertory with Hamlet came up, we decided we couldn't just do that ourselves. And we talked about other groups to approach, and Stringhouse made the most sense, mainly because we wanted Emily to do it. We knew that it was a play that she loved. We knew that we worked with her a lot, and we love her style, and the collaborative element just seemed like something we would all be able to handle together. Yeah. So that's kind of, those were the germs.
Well, it's nice that, you know, for people to understand that a lot of arts projects begin in conversation, and it may take years for it to develop, but it starts with basically talking about it, doesn't it? And so that's why, you know, a lot of these talkbacks actually after plays are real important too, because, you know, this is conversation and getting audience feedback. So you're producing both Hamlet and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in Are Dead and repertory. It's rotating repertory. So there's different shows, different nights, same cast, right? Mm-hmm. So that's pretty complex. Those plays are pretty complex as themselves, you know, right, in of itself. But these are pretty complex plays.
You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. And so how big are the casts that you're working with?
Oh, is it 15?
15.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, even just artistic project aside, that being a hugely ambitious thing, just as from a producing standpoint, making two shows show-worthy with the same cast in the time that you would normally take to do one show is pretty ambitious. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been entirely worthwhile.
Ambitious is a good word. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, talking with Elizabeth Watt, Emily Gregory, and Erica Turpinine Romeo, all from Anonymous Moves and Stringhouse Theater in a collaboration. They're about to open Hamlet and Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. And those are running in repertory Thursdays through Saturdays from July 25th through August 23rd. Now, the two plays are definitely related. I mean, Shakespeare's Hamlet, of course, is the Prince of Denmark who has issues with a dead father and his mother who remarried all of his of all people, his uncle. So it's safe to say a good majority of Americans, I think, have heard of Hamlet, you know, at least, you know, kind of understand that and the to be or not to be speech. But I don't think as many people know about Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. And those are the two minor characters that you know, you see a few times that are Hamlet's friends, and then all of a sudden they're dead. And so it's what goes on behind the scenes, right? What fascinates you about that, Emily, the play itself?
Well, it really fascinates me, this idea that that Tom Stoppard has invented a whole another play that's happening kind of concurrently but offstage to Hamlet. And I just love the idea that he fell in love with these two characters, and the idea that they're are kind of, you know, we don't even see their deaths on stage. They happen in England, and then we're told about it. And how we don't really get to feel, you know, we don't really care.
Because we don't really feel anything about
them. You don't really feel anything because you haven't really had the time to
care
about them.
Oh, they're dead, who cares,
right? Yeah. So I just love the idea that was kind of such a sad thought to Stoppard, that he wanted to devote a whole play to these two people.
And it is a funny play, but it's also full of...
It's really funny, yeah.
A lot of satire as well. Mm-hmm. So, Erica, you're performing Hamlet in this production, right?
Yeah.
And as well as being the co-artistic director of Anonymous Moves. So it's a role that all male actors covet. You know, it's like, oh, we have to play Hamlet. Have you played Hamlet? No, I haven't yet. You know, so it's one of those kind of roles. So is this, in your interpretation of Hamlet, are you a man or a woman?
I'm a woman.
You're a woman.
Yeah.
Okay, so some people have played it. I mean, there's this long tradition, Sarah Bernhardt, mm-hmm. you know, Sarah Siddons back in 1775, you know, played it as a man, mm-hmm. right? So how is this, what is your interpretation of Hamlet?
Well, that was one of the things that was intriguing to us about the project. Anonymous Moves is committed to non-traditional interpretations of Shakespeare's plays, and so that will show up in casting, it will show up in what elements we decide to lift out of the text. There's so much going on that you can mine a whole lot, and it'll yield an answer to almost any question you choose to ask it. So when we started thinking about the way I think about the role, Hamlet is trusted with a task, and if Hamlet were a different character, the task would be accomplished pretty quickly. Some people like to say, and it's something that I say a lot, if Hamlet and Othello switched plays, both of those plays would be a lot shorter. If Othello were told, your father's been killed, you have to avenge his death, it would be like, no problem, 15 minutes,
yeah,
it's done.
I'll be back.
That's what's interesting about the character laertes who's played by Heath Hewton, who's a remarkable actor and a Anonymous Moves company member, that Laertes is also entrusted with the same task and gets right on it. It's not a problem. So thinking about what it is that Hamlet, that sort of stops Hamlet from being able to get the job done right away, and one thing that occurred to me a while ago is that Hamlet's sort of miscast in his or her own play, and trying to build that out and see if there can be a gender implications of that. That's really interesting, and it changes the relationship between Hamlet and Ophelia in an interesting way, and the objections that folks have to that relationship in the play. It creates a really interesting dynamic between Hamlet and Gertrude, Hamlet's mother, that can kind of throw on its head some of the traditional, or what have become the traditional interpretations of that scene between the two of them, and the discomfort that Hamlet has with Gertrude's remarriage.
Well, let's get Elizabeth in on this as the director of this. So what is your concept of Hamlet?
Well, it's first of all, it's amazing to have Erica, because she can take on any direction we take her. This character, this is a woman, this is an intellectual, very sharp, thoughtful person with a noble heart. And I feel like that's where we keep coming back to, is that this play was a love-filled world before this huge injustice, this betrayal happened. And Hamlet, our Hamlet, is trying to reconcile herself with a world that has been broken. And so that her intentions for this meaningful and good relationship with Ophelia, this meaningful, what used to be solid relationship with her mother, is all unraveling. And we get to watch that, and we get to follow it as she is, after she is met by the spirit world and this ghostly father.
Well, let's hear. Can we hear just a short piece from Erica as Hamlet?
Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. Is it not monstrous that this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, can force his soul so to his own conceit that from her working all his visage waned? Tears in his eyes, distraction in his aspect, a broken voice, and his whole function suiting with forms to his conceit. And all for nothing. For Hecuba, what's Hecuba to him, or he to Hecuba, that he should weep for her? What would he do, had he the motive and the cue for passion that I have? He would drown the stage with tears, and cleave the general ear with horrid speech, make mad the guilty, and appall the free, confound the ignorant, and amaze indeed the very faculties of eyes and ears. Yet I, a dull and muddy-mettled rascal, peek like John o' Dreams, unpregnant of my cause, and can say nothing. Am I a coward?
Nicely done. Nicely done. I wonder, you know, do you think that, are you getting any eyebrows being raised, you know, when you say you're cast in Hamlet? Not from your immediate friends. I'm thinking from the outside world.
If they're getting raised, they're getting raised at me by my immediate friend. you know, yes, but in a very friendly way. I mean, Portland is, if you're going to do it in Portland. You know what I mean?
But it's like, oh, wow, Hamlet,
they're,
you.
They're, absolutely. Yeah. I think that there's a kind of, it's surprising, and it's sort of curious. People are curious about it. They're curious about, like you were, whether we're playing. It's
as a
female
man or
actress
woman,
playing.
Yeah.
But and that's what's sort of fun about it. That normally people hear Hamlet, not normally, but it can happen. People hear Hamlet, and they're like, "Oh, good, another Hamlet."
There you go. So it's a little bit refreshing.
Yeah.
In the time remaining, Emily, let's talk about maybe your take. On Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. It's kind of a different perspective of Hamlet, isn't it? I mean, it's totally different.
It is, and yet it isn't, because it, I think it marries itself so well to this idea, this concept of that Erica and Lizzie are working with Hamlet, of Hamlet being a character miscast in his own play. And the same is definitely true for Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. They're these two very unassuming, good people who are sort of they're just not good at the politics and on the, you know, all of the subtle doings of court, and they're sort of dragged into this this plot that they are never really fully conscious of until it's too late, and they're sort of casualties of of the very tangled web that unfolds throughout Hamlet. So it's been really interesting to work on a play that really delves into that and explores that at the same time that Erica and Lizzie are working on this interpretation of Hamlet.
Do you two, Elizabeth, and you compare notes about which directions you're going with it?
Yeah, and that's been the most.
I would think that would be kind of cool to do that.
Oh,
actually.
Definitely, and that's what's been the most exciting thing about this project is that Lizzie and I have had to collaborate in a way that you'd never really get the opportunity to do with another director on a project like this. Like we've been in each other's rehearsals. We've, you know, there's been a lot of. Looking at, I'll go into a Hamlet rehearsal and see something interesting that Lizzie is doing, and I'll say, oh, I have to put that in.
And how about you, Elizabeth?
Yeah,
or Lizzie?
trying to pick up little threads from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern and pull them into Hamlet, and I think the same way it's going back and forth. And there is even some purposeful repetition that we've worked with inside of that. So that's been really exciting.
Well, it sounds great that you guys are, you know, collaborating so closely. Anonymous Moves and Stringhouse Theater present Shakespeare's Hamlet, directed by Elizabeth Watt, and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead by Tom Stoppard, directed by Emily Gregory. And both shows are running in repertory Thursdays through Saturdays on July 25th through August 23rd. All shows are at Zoomtopia, 810 Southeast Belmont in Portland. For more info, visit Zoomtopia.com, and you can get all that info on stageandstudio.org. And we have a pair of tickets to offer to Hamlet, but it's not going to be a phone call this time. This time you're going to go to facebook.com/stage, the letter and studio, for the Stage and Studio Facebook page. And the first person to post there gets to win a pair of tickets to Hamlet. Elizabeth Watt, Emily Gregory, and Erica Turpinning Romeo, great name. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Especially for Shakespeare Company to have Romeo in there, right? So break legs this weekend, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Next up, Brian Allard of Original Practice Shakespeare Festival. We're going to hear some music from Hamlet, though, in this music break from Anonymous Moves. I'm Dime Roberts. Joining me via phone is Artistic Director Brian Allard of Original Practice Shakespeare Festival. Hello, Brian.
Hi.
Hey, you're there. Welcome to Stage and Studio.
I'm glad to be here.
This is your busiest time of the year, it would seem. This is when your company performs original folio editions of Shakespeare's plays. And to recap what that means, it's like original scripts with only each individual actor's or character's lines and cues. And you perform these folios without rehearsal. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Why?
I know that sounds crazy.
Why no rehearsal? Is it because you want to have the improv aspect of it?
That's part of it. The original concept comes from Patrick Tucker, who was a British theater professional and historian. And he was wondering how it was that Shakespeare's actors managed to perform 20 to 25 different plays in a month. And he went in and did all sorts of research and wrote a book about it. And the conclusion he came to was that they didn't rehearse because they didn't have time or really the concept of rehearsal the way that we have it now. And so we're trying to recreate that effect where our actors only get their own lines and a few words of their cue, which was partially born out of that reason. It was also because they didn't have copyright then, and it would have been very easy to steal the play and do it somewhere else. But the actors just get their own lines, and then they meet on the day of the show and do the show. We do rehearse fights because that would be unsafe, but other than that, and songs. But everything else is completely unrehearsed.
Well, and so there must be a lot of improvising that goes on, though, during this performance.
Absolutely, and our actors are trained in improv as well as in Shakespeare, both through our company, and that's the actors that we seek out. And we also have an onstage prompter who keeps the whole thing going.
Oh, nice. Nice thing.
A little wacky, which is also historical.
Well, that's not to say the actors don't study the plays, because I know you guys study them a lot, and you really do a lot of search in your process to go for the real meaning of the words that people are speaking. But the improv element does make for a great fun. I mean, it's great fun, especially for the comedies you're doing, right? Much Ado About Nothing, As You Like It, Taming of the Shrew, I think, and is it Comedy of Errors, too, that you're doing this summer?
Yep. And 12th Night.
And 12th Night. So you're doing pretty much most of the comedies, it would seem. But you're also performing Macbeth and Henry IV, Part 1. I mean, these are serious plays. Now, do they turn into comedic plays, or do you keep the intention of the tragedy?
Well, it's Henry IV, Part 1 is half comedy.
That's true, so, with Falstaff especially.
Yeah, which helps a bit. And Romeo and Juliet, the first half is a comedy, the second half is a tragedy. But with Macbeth, there's, you know, we've got the porter scene, that's about it. but we go for the tone of the scene. So even if there does need to be an improvisational break, which can happen if we have, we're performing outdoors in parks for the most part. So there are definitely times when we have to stop because there's a really loud jet plane and nobody can hear us. So we stop. But we try to make the improv breaks and things like that fit the tone of the scene. So we may ask the character for what they're thinking right now or what they wrote in the journal today, something that can stay within the tone of the seriousness of what's going on. We're less likely to stop in a tragedy only if we absolutely have to, something going on. But whereas the comedies will pretty much take any excuse to stop and do something silly. But the ultimate goal there is to make sure that none of the text is lost. And that if we're performing as a distraction or a noise, that what we're doing on the stage at that particular moment is not vital to the story or, frankly, any of the words that Shakespeare wrote. We're at that point doing something silly that if you miss it, it's not a big deal.
Well, this season, I thought it was interesting that Opsfest, Original Practice Shakespeare Festival, asked the audience to kind of vote on who's going to be who performed in your Midsummer Night's Dream. So people cast votes online. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, we chose the actors that would be in it, and then we posted those online with bios and headshots and asked the audience to cast the show from those 21 actors and the 21 to match the 21 roles.
Did you get a lot of interaction from people on that?
We did. We had some people that were very enthusiastic in their voting. We set it up similar to the All-Star, like the baseball All-Star game, where they can vote online and you kind of have up to 25 votes per day, per person, and we had some people who maxed out on that every day.
Oh, wow. Well, that's pretty incredible, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to do that more often, do you think?
Well, we always use some sort of gimmick for our late night Midsummer on Midsummer Nights. Last year, it was that we had all the men play women and all the women played men. So this year, we decided to have the audience vote, which we can do because our actors switch roles on a regular basis since you're not having to rehearse it, you're only studying it on your own. It gives you a lot more flexibility for that. But we might do something similar to that next year. I'm still working out exactly what next year's gimmick for the late night Midsummer will be.
Well, it's nice to keep it fresh and keep it engaging because you choose different plays each summer, right? Even though you're doing so many of them.
We add two new plays each year. So this year we're up to 9 in our repertoire. Next year we'll have 11. And then we do perform everything that we know. We perform all of those shows at Laurelhurst Park at the end of July.
Oh, you do? Oh, it's sort of like this big festival at the end of July. Well, that's now. Exactly. That's this weekend.
Yep, we're halfway through. We have four left this weekend. We're doing Comedy Bears on Thursday, Macbeth on Friday, and then on Saturday afternoon is As You Like It. Saturday night is Henry IV Part 1. And then on Sunday is part of our, we also perform with the Sunday Parkways, and there's a Sunday Parkways on Sunday. So we're doing Much Ado About Nothing at Fern Hill Park with them. So we have a very full weekend.
You really do. How many people do you have in your company?
We rotate about 50 actors and six of them.
Wow, 50 actors. Well, I mean, it can be quite grueling, so it's nice to have a big pool of people that you can work with, definitely. And so this is just for the summer, so all the rest of the year you're planning and just doing, you know, the normal stuff of working in other theaters and that kind of thing?
me personally and our company members as well, yeah, we do have 12 core members who meet monthly to work on the planning the season, as well as four staff members, and we do some out of season performances. We're available for bookings. We use the joke, but it's true. We've been booked for people's birthday parties. You know, we'll play a birthday party or a bar mitzvah or a wedding or anything you want.
Also, you do keep busy throughout the year, then.
I'm not as busy as I'd like at this point, but we're still getting the word out. But we do perform at schools. We've had a few performances at high schools or colleges. We did have, famously, one birthday party that we performed in someone's backyard, which we're actually hoping to redo again this year.
I think it'd be kind of fun to do that, actually. What's your motivation for your 12 company members and you? What's your motivation for doing Shakespeare or performing Shakespeare this way?
One of the things that I love the most about this particular performance style is that it reaches out and connects with people who don't generally like Shakespeare. we get a lot of people who just wander across our shows in parks, and then we get letters from them that are like, I never understood Shakespeare before. I was never interested in Shakespeare before. The only experience I had with it was, you know, being forced to read it in English class in ninth grade. And they come to our shows, and suddenly they realize that they are something that they enjoy. It's important to remember that Shakespeare was written to be performed, not to be read in a classroom. And I have great respect for people who use modern techniques in Shakespeare performances, and I enjoy directing them that way as well. But this particular style really connects with, I don't want to say the common man, but it connects with people who don't spend their whole life in the arts or in Shakespeare or in theater.
Why is that?
Because Shakespeare wrote them that way. Because in Shakespeare's day, theater was the common entertainment of the time. He was writing their sitcoms. He was writing their hour-long television equivalents. And also he had to. At the time, that's how they were making their living, and they were hustling for it because there were six other theaters right on the block, and there was a bear baiting down the street in the whorehouse there. And if you wanted people to come to your theater, you had to have the newest thing, the freshest thing, and the thing that the people who paid only $5 and stood down in front, and they were going to yell at you if they were bored. So you had to keep connected to people, which is why we have characters like Falstaff.
Well, it sounds like great fun for the summer, and it's really a chance to see a different way, actually, to see how Shakespeare first performed his plays. So you can find out more about Original Practice Shakespeare Festival at opsfest.org, or see a scheduled performances there as well, and also on stageandstudio.org. Brian Allard, thanks for chatting today. It was great to talk with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Have a great summer.
Yeah, you too.
That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. And you can like us on facebook.com/stage_studio. And that's where also you can post to see if you can win a pair of tickets to Hamlet as well. And you can also tweet me at @StageTheLetterNStudio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts. We'll go out with more music by Carl Zero. Pense, pense, vuol dir pensati a me.
Ogni giorno come d'un fiore, e lo appunti in petto a te. Stamattina sul tuo cuore, c'ha mi tutta una pensée. E perché ce l'hai me tutta, se no
non sbaglio l'ho capito. Mi vuoi dire oh bella fatta che tu pensi sempre a me?
Ah 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 ah, che bella panse che tieni, che bella panse che hai.
Me la dai,
no,
me la dai,
no,
me la dai la tua pensée. Io ne tengo un altro in petto e l'unisco tutte e due.
Panse mia, panse tua, per ricordo del nostro amor. Panse.
Before we go to Art Focus with host Joseph Galavan, I have an announcement. KBOO is sad to announce the death of former volunteer Nancy Beamer. Nancy was a loyal listener to KBOO and often answered phones during our membership drives. She loved KBOO and gave her time and financial support to many different nonprofit organizations. Friends say she loved to be outdoors, loved the mountains, the beach, skiing and walking on the beach during sunset. Nancy died on July 14th at the age of 71. Her memorial service will be on Saturday, July 26th at 1 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church's Channing Chapel.
Still have a go. I'd like to be a gallery. Put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream.
I'm Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guests this week are Arnold and Jakob Panda. They're talking about their show Fabrication Corrosion at the Mark Woolley Gallery in Pioneer Place Mall. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
This show is Arnold's paintings on velvet and Jakob's photography printed on metal. So we'll start talking to Arnold first. The main image for the show that you see everywhere is Miley Cyrus with her big mouth open. Yes. It's called Mouse